This podcast is sponsored by TechSmith. Right now, millions of people are snagging. Are you? And by Intuitech, tools for building better websites. Be sure to check out Interaction Design 08 in Savannah, Georgia, happening February 8th to the 10th. For more information on this event, check out interaction08.ixda.org. And for other events and conferences happening all over the world, be sure to visit events.boxesandarrows.com. Hi, and welcome back to the Boxes and Arrows podcast. My name's Jeff Parks, and I'll be your host for this episode. The other day, I had the chance to speak with Afshan Kermani on her article, Getting a Form Structure Right. We talk about the concepts of affordance, orientation, and chunking. We also go into detail about the importance of security, Lua, and communicating with the end user through text and graphical elements to ensure they know precisely where they are in the application process. Many thanks to Afshan for taking time out of her very busy schedule to join me on this show, and I hope everyone enjoys the podcast. Cheers. So Afshan, on your article, Getting a Form Structure Right, you say that the usability industry is growing and moving forward day to day. But as usability practitioners, are we getting the basics right before moving ahead? I think not. You focus on application forms for financial institutions in your article, discussing the issues that a usability practitioner must address to create a usable online application form. The first of these ideas is what you call affordance. Can you briefly describe this concept to our listeners?
Right. As you know, Jeff, the term was originally introduced by Gibson, which was then further adopted to human-computer interaction by Norman. This took about 11 years. Gibson introduced it in 1977, and Norman introduced it in 1988. So it took about 11 years to take the step forward. I decided why not take it further to realistically see how this term impacts our users.
Right.
To date, this term has been vaguely defined. It defines that a ball can afford throwing, a chair can afford sitting, a button affords clicking or pushing. So basically, I thought, what next from here? Deciding to move 19 years ahead, we should be looking at this term from a user's perspective, right?
Absolutely.
Now, let me just talk about its relevance to interaction as we see it today. In product design or even graphical screen-based interfaces, the visual feedback and perception that users receive from a particular interaction determines the level of affordance acquired by users. This can be achieved through content and as well as visual feedback. Referring back to my article, Jeff, I decided to provide more meaning and depth to this term. Affordance, as defined, is a property that allows an object, let's say a button, to look more appealing so that users can move ahead by wanting to click on it. Taking the meaning of this term a level higher, affordance should also be seen from a marketing perspective, as I would see it. That is, how well is the website marketed to allow users to move ahead? It isn't just about the look and feel that is exuded, I would say. It is also about the content that drives users towards their goal.
Okay.
Let me take an example.
Sure.
With respect to an online financial applications, users may not necessarily come online to apply for, let's say, a mortgage application. They might just come online to probably look at the offers provided or even to learn more about it. Now, the quicker users move ahead to apply, the more powerful is the affordance that has been created. As usability practitioners and designers today, we must make sure that users move ahead and apply by this lure that is created. The content must be able to aid users to say, let's say a user is thinking, now a mortgage is what I am, what I need right now, and I want to move ahead.
Right.
This might not have been a primary goal when he or she came online. Probably just learning about it was the intention. But I would say that success is spelled out when this lure has been created. So basically, Jeff, I would say that a synonym that has been used for affordance is a lure. Anything that creates a lure is what I call affordance. The more convincing a lure, the better affordance is provided by an interface, right?
Absolutely. That makes complete sense. And another part of your article relating to this idea of affordance is this idea. You talk about entry points, using the Bank of America website as an example. Can you clarify what is an entry point and why it's important when creating useful forms?
An entry point is basically a path users choose to take to expect to gain what is desired. Now, there may be several entry points to a particular application. Let's take Bank of America as an example, Jeff.
Okay.
As users decide to enroll for online banking, they can either do it directly from the homepage or from the details page by clicking on the online banking link, then learning about it, and then probably deciding to enroll. Users who know that they want to enroll do it directly from the homepage, but some users who need a helping hand and a convincer move a level deeper to figure out that they need to enroll to get access to their online accounts. If they are still not convinced, then they are able to view a demo before moving ahead. Now, this is the lure or affordance that I was talking about, Jeff. You need to make users want to enter the site, enter without thinking twice. So Bank of America provides a good lure by mentioning that online enrollment is number one, free, number two, easy, and number three, secure. You can see this on the screenshot in my article. This is something that users want to hear, right? So why not basically give it to them wholeheartedly, I would say.
Absolutely.
Right. On the other hand, talking about Chase, this website doesn't provide this lure on the homepage. It merely says, get a user ID. Now, is this convincing enough to move ahead? I think not. So when users decide to click on the online banking link on the homepage, they are amazed to find the enroll queue below the scroll, embedded within textual matter. Have a look at this in the screenshot, Jeff. Look at it carefully from a user's perspective. Which website do you think would get more prospects in? Bank of America or Chase?
Yeah,
what do you think, Jeff?
Well, I would think Bank of America.
Right, bingo.
Yeah.
And you're right. Right. The key here is basically to provide a good lure with a good visual cue to begin applying. This should be applied to any form, actually, not just in the financial domain. I would say a good lure in terms of content, good cue in terms of visual feedback. That's the key.
Yeah, exactly. Because in your article, you also discuss, and all of these things are related, obviously, because part of lure is you talk about the importance of an overview page. Quoting from your article, you say that the website must provide users with an overview of the application process. Can you expand on why such a page is necessary when creating useful forms?
Right. All right. So soon after a good entry point is established, users are looking for, basically users are thinking what's next in line for them. I wouldn't suggest overwhelming users with the application soon after clicking on the apply or the enroll link. A form should always be a conversation between the interface and the user. So now this overview page would essentially establish a relationship before users begin to fill out the form. If you look at it, this is a metaphor taken from a real-life context, actually. As users enter the local branch, they are most likely introduced to a relationship manager, right? Is that how it works out there, Jeff?
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
Right, because that's how it works here in India as well.
Yep.
So before users are presented with a form, they are introduced to the process at large. Soon after filling up the form, they are also introduced to the steps that are ahead of them. So this relationship should reflect on an online application forms process as well.
Okay.
All right. To briefly talk about this overview page, users would expect to see what lies ahead of them. Let's say Vacovia as an example, users are introduced to, number one, the length of the process, that is how long it would take to fill out the form. Number two, alternate ways of applying. This can be through the phone or through the local branch. Number three, the requirements to keep in handy while applying. This can be a social security number, income amount, asset information, current expenses, etc. This actually basically depends on the application, Jeff.
Of course.
Number four, the overview page must also provide the steps ahead for users to take. That is, what users need to expect soon after hitting on that submit button. And lastly, and most importantly, actually, an affirmation of online success. Most forms I notice provide this affirmation soon after users click on the submit button. That's definitely a good cue so long as it is also marketed at the beginning of the application.
Right. So these are a lot of steps, and they're obviously very important. But right. knowing all of these things, how do we then look at measuring the success of online forms?
Mm-hmm. All right. So when users feel that they would be instantly approved, they tend to trust the bank a bit more, and this then makes them move ahead. Again, this is achieved by marketing and nothing else. For example, with the case of Wachovia, users know that they will be instantly approved. In fact, they can even view their account online instantly. Excellent marketing there. On the other hand, some other websites do not market this upfront. The sites take users through the entire application to then find out that they have got their loan, assuming that you're applying for a loan. Imagine yourself as a user, Jeff. Wouldn't you like to know that your application process will be quick?
Absolutely.
And painless?
Yeah, and absolutely.
And to top it all, that you would get your loan immediately, and you can also view your account online instantly.
Yeah.
This usually takes about a few business days, but some banks market this really clearly upfront and allow users, you know, take away all the pain from the users and allow an easy process, which is excellent. You know, this has been achieved by Wachovia. So I say, why can't it be achieved by other firms as well?
Yeah, and it can be, absolutely. If we follow these steps that you're suggesting. And one of the comments you made was this idea about trust. And online security of personal information is a constant issue for companies as well as end users. And because end users need to feel confident when providing personal information of any kind over the net, what text or graphical elements can organizations build into forms to provide end users with this feeling of I trust you and I will look after you, your information, and I won't share it with other people?
All right. So basically, I would say that websites need to ensure online security, as you rightly said, at every step of the way. The key is every step of the way. Whether it is filling up an application form or logging on to online banking, users need to feel safe and comfortable. The ideal way to do this is by providing a lock icon along with textual messaging, like your information is secure, you are safe online, etc. Users want to basically hear the word secure.
Right.
As soon as they read this, the relationship is then tightened. The text provides an aid to move forward, while the icon provides recognition for recall when they visit the site again. And if sites don't ensure this, Jeff, users will find the need to contact the bank pondering about their safety of their personal information, as you rightly said.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely. And the second area that needs greater attention, according to your article, is that of orientation. And quoting from your article here, you say that ensuring that the page header matches the preceding queue helps applicants orient themselves better and understand which form they're filling out. You compare two websites in this example, the U.S. Bank and Charles Schwab. Can you elaborate on the strengths of the U.S. Bank form and the issues with the form on Charles Schwab's site?
Mm-hmm. All right. So as we already know, orientation helps users get familiar with the surrounding area, right? That is, users need to orient themselves before making that decision to move ahead. U.S. Bank, for example, provides a really good feedback as users move from the link to begin the application to the form's title. As you can see in the screenshot, there's a clear feedback from one step to another. Now, when users enter the application, they are clear of where they are. On the other hand, as you were talking about, Charles Schwab and many other banks for that matter don't provide this feedback. As users click on the link, the feedback provided on the next page is completely different. Again, this causes disorientation. The problem with Charles Schwab is that users click on a link expecting to apply for a home equity line of credit, but instead they are led to registering online. The key here is to orient users by retaining the label that was previously clicked on, Jeff.
Exactly. And related to this idea of orientation, you talk about a progress bar. Maybe you could talk a little bit more to our listeners about what is a progress bar and why it's important for developing useful online forms.
Definitely. All right. So a progress bar, sometimes known as a wizard or a progress indicator, allows users to orient themselves for the present and for the future. A good progress bar would show the steps at every stage up front without having to be surprised by it later on in the forms process. Users need to know what is expected of them now and also what is expected of them later. All right, let's take an example. National City, a perfect example. Unlike other websites, it also provides affirms the steps that have been completed and consequently the steps that are to be completed as well. Here, I would also like to include the importance of feedback and current location, Jeff.
Okay.
Number one, feedback at every step is important for users as they know the steps ahead of them. For example, let's say KeyBank merely throws in the steps along the way. That is, users are baffled as they don't really know how long a forms process is because the steps are thrown in as you're filling out the application.
Of course.
And number two, a forms process should also talk about the current location of the form, which should be matching the progress indicator label with the header on the page. Basically, I would say that a true progress indicator would provide good feedback of the step that was taken previously, and also that the steps that is currently undertaken, that is your current location, is specified clearly, Jeff.
Absolutely. Now, related to this idea of orientation and the progress bar, I'm curious as to whether or not you feel a progress bar would be necessary for shorter application processes, or is it only necessary for longer ones, or should we be doing it regardless of the length of the form?
All right. Jeff, I would say that whether a short application or a longish one, users need to know where exactly they are and what exactly is happening at a point in time. This progress bar clearly negates any confusion that would occur. Even if a form is 2 pages long, Jeff, I would insist on that progress bar, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, we don't know how comfortable everyone is with using technology. If it was you or me, that's great. But if we're looking at people that aren't comfortable using computers and we're asking them to provide things online, it can create a difficult situation for our end users. So the progress bar ultimately just keeps everybody on track and know exactly where you are in the process at all times, correct?
Mm-hmm. Perfect, right.
Okay. Great. So the third and final area you discuss is that of the idea of chunking. Can you elaborate on the concept of chunking? What is it?
Chunking is a term derived from psychology.
Yep.
It is basically a strategy that is used to group information to help users or readers retain and recall the information easily. So when your information is chunked, people can not only get a clear overview of the page, but they can also read the information on the page better when it is grouped systematically, Jeff.
You noted an excellent framework at the end of your document that shows the importance of the user experience. Quoting from your article, as usability practitioners, we need to first and foremost understand that the user's intentions and expectations in order to provide an online experience that accommodates them. So in that spirit, I'd like to turn to some of the comments from your article, if that's okay.
Great.
Anna Rubin, who is a software usability and requirements analyst at RIM in the United States, noted, it is interesting that you suggested adding a phone number on every page. I think I might be a little bit hesitant to do that if you would like to decrease customer calls, which are expensive. Of course, I agree that it is helpful for the user, but in some cases, it might not be very beneficial for the company. What are your thoughts here?
Mm-hmm. All right, I completely agree with Anna here. The decision is actually left up to the firms that provide online applications. From a user's point of view, Jeff, it is definitely beneficial. But on the other hand, the cost to the company increases as there's a huge investment made to business process outsourcing. Again, if it were up to a usability practitioner, this number on each page is a must. But if it's left up to a business analyst, that number would not be provided. It's basically an internal fight that is often a challenge in most cases. The solution here is to fight for it, I would say. If that can't be done, hiring qualified usability practitioners can reduce queries during an online forms process. I'm quite sure that you would agree with me here, Jeff.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. Yep.
Right. So this is an ideal situation, actually. A perfect form can be achieved. Some practitioners compromise on this by providing a help link, which is far from beneficial, as clicking on a link during a form is highly unlikely, I would say. So I say let's innovate and provide an ideal forms process that can benefit and reduce online queries.
Yeah, well, innovation is the key, absolutely.
Right.
From Australia, Jessica Enders commented that, personally, I think one of the most helpful metaphors is that of the conversation. A good form mm-hmm. is a tool for having a conversation with someone in order to gather data from them, which in turn allows you to provide a service or a good. In your experience, is the use of metaphors a powerful method for creating user-friendly forms?
Right. This has really sparked off a discussion online, and I'm glad that you bring it forward today, Jeff. Yes, and I do agree that we need to duplicate reality and its metaphors online for our users. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, with technical jargon used online and the technical process that is involved, might just make users feel alienated. This does not mean that we only stick to metaphors and nothing more, like discussed with Richard in one of my comments. It would be ideal to take a metaphor forward to provide something more. A user's mental model comes from the metaphors used around him, obviously. So let's take an example. An online form that aids a good conversation is a metaphor taken from reality. Taking this metaphor forward, we can provide a good conversation with relevant fields to be filled out by users. With the use of Ajax today, a form can become much more useful and efficient. This is what I mean by taking a metaphor forward, Jeff. We need to retain that simplicity but enhance its usefulness. Here you take a conversation forward, that being the metaphor, and use Ajax to make relevant fields appear as users fill out the form. That is taking this metaphor forward.
Excellent. Yeah, and metaphors are powerful tools today, especially for people that aren't very technically coherent to be able to relate ideas to them. And that's just as critical when filling out online forms, obviously, especially when you're dealing with financial institutions. So excellent comment. Rupal Kumar from India, and I apologize, I'm probably butchering the name, stated, it's my Canadian accent, that's the problem, comparing products, selecting products, and then suddenly changing decisions due to other parameters is a natural human instinct. How do online forms aid in these human instincts?
Right. So rightly said by Ripple, users would obviously want to learn about a product, compare its features, and then probably apply soon after. In my opinion, allowing users to compare products during an online application would be mundane. Is that the right word I'm using? Mundane?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, would be mundane. An alternative would be to provide a good upsell of products as the applicant is applying. So basically, a brief comparison table with a checkbox to apply would resolve the issue. What I mean by this, Jeff, is that a form should always be used as a medium to help users achieve and do something. By providing textual matter during a form, users are definitely going to cringe, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Right. Yeah. So instead, by providing textual matter and allowing them to choose as many products as they would like to apply for would make them feel like they are headed somewhere. The more products you can apply for in one shot, in one go, would obviously benefit users, right, Jeff?
Absolutely. Yeah. There's no question.
All right.
Rupal also goes on to state in the same comment that, you know, he's talking about this idea of being able to save information. And he states that, you know, I have my bank, insurance, and mutual fund forms halfway. And then he runs into a process where, you know, it's, you know, he's talking about how he didn't say add a save button. He said, I set a way to implicitly save the information without asking users to do it. So, you know, what are your thoughts around this idea?
Right. I'm so glad that some comments have arisen without me putting it forward in my article. Really, I'm really glad that he brought this forward. So some online applications today allow users to save the form, but unfortunately, users are led to yet another tedious step of filling out basic identity information, which, by the way, should be remembered by users at a later point in time, Jeff. Right. So, do you see yourself remembering a username and password for an incomplete form?
Personally, no. I have a hard time remembering my username and password for normal sites like Facebook, let alone an online application form.
That's maybe why I'm not on Facebook.
There you go.
Yeah. Right. So rightly stated by Ripple, applications need to automatically save the form without leading to another page that requires a username and a password. So basically, a button that simply reads save and continue should do the trick.
Exactly. And actually, Gmail does a good job of this as well, just sort of going offline a little bit. As you're composing emails, it tells you that it's saving a draft for you after a few seconds of no action, no typing. So that I think that does a good job as well. It literally tells you saved as draft. So if you happen to close it out, you're good to go.
Right.
Yeah,
that's completely true.
Yeah. From the U.S., Bo Laura made an interesting statement when he commented, forms, in a paper sense, don't have any intuitive. Unfortunately, we take these forms on the web and we sometimes don't realize the opportunity to be intuitive. For example, in a form that you have to input a billing and shipping address, if you have a checkbox that says, quote, same as billing address, unquote, why does the user have to see the shipping address fields? Often these are shown and pre-filled with the billing address. In paper form, this is inevitable, but on the web, you can hide them unless the user unchecks the box. This is a challenge for many UX and interaction designers. What are your thoughts about Bo's idea? Do you agree with, do you see the issue that he's bringing up?
Yes, I completely see it, and I definitely see that this is a challenge, as most designers need to get trained in this area today. Ajax is fairly a new development today. I see so many applications that allow all the fields to appear, with whether being mandatory or not. Bo's comment is extremely useful, as this makes us aware of small usability issues that can make such a difference to user experience online. By fields automatically appearing depending on what users have checked makes room for usability, as it saves them time, reduces confusion, and also makes the form shorter. This also makes the form subjective to user needs, an extremely useful strategy to help users glide through the form easily, Jeff. So basically, I would say the solution is quite blatant here. Hire the best of designers.
Yeah, absolutely, and those are. Oh, and as we know, there's a lot of those out there, so there shouldn't be a hard time finding those professionals to help organizations.
Right, but quite honestly, at least in India, that would be the challenge, actually.
Oh, really? Okay, interesting. All
right. Right. Yeah.
So the last comment that I wanted to bring up today was that of from the Netherlands. Arjan van Erkel stated that, Ashan, the success of the form will be even greater if you add a web copywriter to your team. It sounds to me like the old analogy, content is king, is still the mantra for organizations, when designing user-friendly forms. Would you agree with that?
Rightly put there, Jeff. A copywriter is definitely an integral part of a form's process, as we all know, and as mentioned in the comment. And if you rip this particle apart, you would see that it's always the content that determines the success of a user-friendly form. Whether it's affordance, orientation, or chunking, users get motivated by the content. Design definitely appeals to our visual senses, but content appeals to motivation. Basically, users are thinking, should I move forward, or is this where I stop? What do I do next? Yeah, these are all the thoughts that are constantly running behind a user's mind.
Right.
So I would say that a copywriter, along with a marketing strategist, can pull this off. But essentially, with small firms where budget is a huge issue, a usability practitioner should be able to fit all these roles. Do you agree with me, Jeff? I'm not sure how it works with you there.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, a copywriter has to work hand in hand with the rest of the team. And I think this, the idea of, you know, looking at a team as a kind of a community that can share knowledge with each other and learn from each other's experiences is really the key to creating this successful web applications, whether it's forms or intranets or internets.
So do you see that a usability practitioner can take on this role as well, or do you need a copywriter separately to, you know, work with the usability practitioner?
I think a copywriter can add value for sure. There's no question, because obviously the content drives the form. And I think the usability practitioner doesn't necessarily need a copywriter, but I think it can add value to the process.
Right. In India, I would say that a usability practitioner takes on all these roles together. Probably big institutions definitely have a copywriter, definitely.
Yep.
But with small institutions, I don't see that the budget, you know, explains this, basically. You know, would a copywriter fit the budget? I don't see that happening. But how is it out there? I mean, it varies depending on the culture, right? So that's why I wanted to get your perspective on this as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It depends on the culture, and you're right. I mean, if you have a usability practitioner and you don't have the budget for it, you don't. That's why I was saying you don't necessarily need a copywriter to add value to the process. But if you can afford it and it makes sense, and because that's the one thing that I found over the years too. There are a lot of people that are very good at writing for print, but those same people aren't necessarily experts at writing for the web, which is an entirely different skill set. I mean, the forms application that you're describing today illustrates that point in my mind very well. You need to get to the heart of what users need, and you need to be able to clearly demonstrate where they are in the process. And as you've pointed out, the idea of orienting them to where they are, to the factors of trust, and making sure that they know where they are on every point along the way, especially when you're applying for loans and money and whatnot, you need to feel very comfortable and confident that you're able to do that with minimal interruptions, as you've noted throughout your article.
Right.
So, Ashan, brilliant. Thank you so much for joining me today, and what has become a very popular article on Boxes and Arrows, just from all the comments from everywhere all over the world. And obviously, this is something that most organizations and businesses struggle with, and I think that your article has done a lot to help people sort of get on the right path to creating a more user-friendly experience when developing forms. So thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.